Blog Talk Radio.
This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Blitzkrieg Broadcast. Thank you so much for joining me here at RenegadeBroadcasting.com. It is January 31st, 2014. As always, I encourage you to check out all the other great hosts here at Renegade Broadcasting. Quite the lineup we have, and I'm really excited for what we've got coming in the future as well. We are gearing up for the White Man March on March 15th, 2014. Do you know what you will be doing on that date? There's a lot of time still left to plan, so get to it. Go over to whitemanmarch.com, sign up, and get active. Should be quite the show that we will be putting on for the world on this date. Now, there are a lot of people who have been active for many years now. One of these people is my guest tonight, Jimmy Marr. You might know Jimmy Marr for his activism in Eugene, Oregon, and in particular, his bagpipes, which make a very loud statement, especially when accompanied by really good propaganda. So I think we already have him on the call board here, so I'm going to bring Jimmy on the show. Hey, Jimmy, is that you?
Yeah, it's Jimmy. Hi, Kyle.
Welcome.
Can you hear
Glad
me?
To have you here. Yes.
Yes, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you for inviting me. Hello to all the listeners.
So, Jimmy, let's learn a little bit more about you. I couldn't find a whole lot of information. Sure, there are a few hit pieces out there about you and your pro-white activism, but could you tell us just a little bit of your story, your background, who you are and why you decided to get active?
Yeah. First of all, I'm 2 years old. I'm going to be 61 here pretty soon. And I'm a retired house husband. I spent most of my working life staying at home with my two kids, and I homeschooled them. And when they left home, it kind of caught me by surprise. And I think I had a male case of empty nest syndrome, maybe something like that. And that was about the time. They were shortly after the time of 9/11 and the wars, and I became concerned about the wars. I could see that they were based on lies, and so involved in the anti-war movement. And I wasn't involved in the anti-war movement too long before I found out that the movement was infiltrated by Jews, who weren't so much anti-war as they were there to run interference for Israel when any of us got onto the idea.
They don't mind being anti-American when it serves them. So that's what
right.
They used the anti-war movement to do, is just pretty much cast the blame at WASPs and other such boogeymen, such as internationalists, globalists, or whoever else Alex Jones is naming today. Germanic death cults, that's one he likes to throw around sometimes.
Yeah, and of course the main reason is to always deflect away interest in Jews, to throw us off the track there. And that was very new to me. I was kind of surprised to see that, And then I was involved with a political discussion group at the University of Oregon, and we started delving into these topics, and we drew a lot of fire from the Jewish community, and the Jewish community specifically in academia. And they were basically, generally trying to take backdoor means to shut us down, get us so we couldn't talk at the university, and so it developed into, some hostility. And once I started getting keen to the Jewish issue, as regards, global geopolitical politics, other people said, well, you know what, there's a domestic side to this, too. You have to understand that the whole racial situation is a proxy war against white people that's being conducted by Jews and the media. We knew, obviously, that the media was lying with regards to geopolitics and with regards to Israel and Palestine, for instance. Didn't know the nature of the lies that they were telling us domestically, but someone, and actually this person was a Soviet dissident that had been deported from the Soviet Union for the troubles that he had been causing there. He was actually a Lithuanian nationalist. He said, look, they're doing this to you domestically. These racial crimes are hushed up by the Jewish media. Black-on-white crime is hushed up. And I thought, no way. I can see it geopolitically, but I went about debunking him, or trying to debunk him on this other domestic problem, and unfortunately, fortunately, for our survival, I found out the truth. I found out that he was correct in what he was saying. And so that got me rolling. And to tie in with what I first said about being a Papa Bear, a stay-at-home Papa Bear, it was kind of my life took on this sort of transformation where, I took those same sentiments that I had about my own immediate family and my kids, and rolled it in. It felt very comfortable just rolling it in to fighting white genocide in the same way that I would protect my own immediate family and my kids. So it was a kind of a natural
your journey is very similar to mine in some ways, as well as a lot of our listeners out there. There are a few different paths to get where we are right now, but the point is that we get here and we're doing something about it. Now, why don't you just discuss some of the things that you tried in terms of raising awareness about the issues and what you found to be most successful?
Well, what I did, I began to use the same discussion group where I found these things out of it. Like I say, this was escalating, and they were trying to get us out of there. And at the same time, we were being infiltrated by Jews who were wanting to use the platform, our free speech platform, to turn it basically into kind of an Islam bashing session. And I didn't want that. I didn't want that. So I fought against that, and I had to think about, okay, how am I going to fight against this? How am I going to keep this from being taken over by Jews? And I decided that the best way to do that, what I wanted to do is I wanted to expose the whole hoax. And I didn't even know at the time completely that it was a whole hoax. I could tell that it was flimsy. I could tell that they were weak. I could tell that I wanted to punch there. And so I started to do some research, and I contacted someone who's an expert and who had some videos on YouTube at the time. And I asked. I said, I wonder, could I use this material? Could I make presentations at the university? And it turned out this person was arm's length related to the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, CODO. And, you know, they really had a long-standing interest in trying to open debate on the Holocaust on college campuses. And so I found myself in this unique position of being able to do that. It's very hard to do. They had been trying and trying and trying, and suddenly here was my chance. And I knew that they were going to trying to get us banned from the university anyway. And it's, you know, the choice was allow ourselves to be infiltrated and subverted or fight this thing now, you know, lock, stock, and barrel by going at the Holocaust and just, you know, go down fighting. I assumed that they were going to get rid of us, and they did. But I had about 6 months there. And I just hammered and hammered and hammered on the Holocaust, and finally they got me banned. I started on that in probably February of 2010, and it was at the beginning of fall semester when the faculty senate passed a resolution changing the university bylaws about who could and couldn't use university facilities, and we were operating under the privileges of a retired faculty. What they said is basically you can't do this. Retired faculty cannot use this privilege without unanimous approval of tenure track professors in their department. It's like, sure, I'm gonna, you know.
Okay,
to get tenure track professors to approve Holocaust revisionism lectures.
Well, with your various presentations, were you able to convince a good number of people that your position was the correct one, or at least that there are a lot of holes in the Jewish narrative?
Yeah, well, the first person that I convinced it was myself. It took a while. You know, like I say, it was just, you know, this was a fight. I just wanted a fight. You know, these people were attacking, and I wanted to attack, you know. And so I started using this material. And, and then suddenly it's amazing just to me kind of psychologically how that stuff evaporates, because the information about the Holocaust didn't get there by process of reasoning. It got there by process of emotional trauma about looking at horrifying photographs and repeating the words Holocaust, Holocaust, Holocaust. But you can't, it's very difficult to take an intellectual approach or a rational approach and undo that kind of program. Especially,
right.
You know, with the university, you know, doing everything in their power. I mean, what they would do is they'd start to basically move my lectures. They couldn't cancel me, but they could move me to a different building so that I didn't, you know, there wasn't enough time to basically get the word out again through the newspapers and so forth and so on like that.
Now,
so,
was the, were the local newspapers covering what you were doing in terms of Holocaust revisionism in 2010?
Covering or covering up? No, they didn't. No, they wouldn't. Well, I mean, they had to make the announcement. They had to make a public service announcement. You know, and they would do that, and that typically had to be submitted by, I don't know, Wednesday. The basically conflict came. The university wouldn't tell me quick enough about where I was going to be in time to get it listed in the paper.
Oh, okay. So what approach did you take next?
Well, that's when I started. I got the idea that I was going to teach myself or learn to play the bagpipes, and that I was going to, you know, I was just going to go on the street. There wasn't much else that I could do. You know, fortunately, in that at that same time that I was kind of going down the drain with Hull Hoax exposés, you know, someone pointed out, well, it wasn't someone. It was a fellow by the name of John Fife. He was the webmaster at, I think it was called Newsnet 14. He wrote to me, he sent me an email and said, you know, I'd like to see what could happen if you guys, meaning us at Pacifica Forum, could get on a consistent message. And he sent me a link to Horace's website. So I actually had enough time to do a couple of white genocide presentations, you know, during that period, as well as the Holocaust revisionism.
Well, why don't you tell about the presentations you gave concerning white genocide? What kind of speaking did you do?
Well, I just basically it was the mantra. I just started working the mantra in and talking about, you know, using the bugs technique to get the message out, and also to even that was a nice thing that I liked about it is I could get the message, even in the newspaper announcement, by calling the lecture white genocide or anti-racism as a code word for anti-white. You know, get it in the newspaper, you know, repeat the words, and start the work.
Now,
without the problem, you know, of really having to go directly against something like the Holocaust. I mean, because you ask the question, is this Holocaust hoax debunking, is it effective? Not so much. It's not so much. They've spent so much money conditioning that in there that it is very resistant. I mean, it's important for people that want to look at it at some point in time, but it's not a move that I think we want to lead with. Even though the university shut me down, I was silenced and everything. Overall, it's not particularly effective. Can just tell people that, they'll get this blank look on their face, they'll come back the next week and you can tell them again, but it takes a long time for them to, well, you know what, it's just like working with Christianity. I mean, these people can't quite, you know what I mean? It takes time for them
to
come out.
Well, it's not a good way to introduce people to our cause by either trying to completely debunk Christianity as the first thing you do, or trying to completely debunk the Holocaust. And
that's right.
It's not effective. It really isn't, because people are so resistant to that, and you have to kind of prioritize what you consider to be the most important message you're trying to get across to people, and how effective it will be in changing their thoughts and actions. Now, you mentioned that you didn't really feel you had much else to do besides pick up some bagpipes, learn to play them. What drew you to the bagpipes themselves. Why did you decide that you needed bagpipes? I mean, Alex Jones just grabs a bullhorn and he goes out there and yells, I guess, his message. You know, there are many different musical instruments to choose from. Why was it the bagpipes?
Well, my heritage is Scottish. So it was kind of natural. I think my son had been married, you know, around that time. My wife and I made kilts, you know, for the wedding. And we started to, you know, have some time on our hands and to explore this Scottish heritage. She's a Wallace on her mother's side. And so, yeah, it was a new thing that I was learning about and that we were learning about and interested in. You know, part of this awakening as a European American, you know, what exploring it, what's it about? How do I fit in and how can I, you know, make a nice statement, you know, without, mm-hmm. you know, probably putting on a swastika or something like that, you know, not to mention the fact that I'm not German as much as I'd be proud to be German. So I started to use the accoutrements of Scottish heritage, and of course I found out about it too. You know, I mean, if you really go back and start to study the British Empire, it was the Jewish Empire. You know, it was the same thing that was happening. You know, Cromwell and the infiltration of the British yes. aristocracy and the Jacobite Wars. You know, I suspected. That it was related. Well, there's this because there's just this, and it's a positive rather than being the Germans, you know, where you really have to be ashamed and overcoming all that Holocaust nonsense. You know, you don't really people tend to like that Scottish thing. They tend to, you know, they have a positive association with the mm-hmm. guilt and with the back. So I thought I'm gonna try to use this. I'm gonna work this angle.
You know what? I think what we need is you with the kilt on. You got the bagpipes, and I actually own a couple kilts myself. But then you also get a German person out there and some lederhosen, not the Nazi uniform. That's not the time. And then you get maybe one or two other groups, ethnic groups within the white race. So maybe it's a Norseman, right? And then you get them all together. And you have celebrate white diversity, because we do have a great deal of diversity, and we like to celebrate it right here within the white race. I really enjoy learning about other white cultures and seeing what they're all about, trying their food, seeing their traditional dances, hearing their music. And I think this is really what a lot of people feel. It's something that we do have going for us. It is a strength. Our diversity is a strength, but their diversity really is a code word for anti-white. They do not like our form of diversity and want to see it squashed out. But I think that by showing our own diversity while we're opposing theirs is one of the keys.
That sounds like a really good idea.
Thanks. Well, you made me think of it. I've seen the same thing being done with redheads, blondes, and brunettes. You know, celebrate diversity. We've got enough of our own. You don't need to ship in the very opposite thing of diversity, which is people that all look like each other. Every single other race on the planet seems to have very set features, such as the Africans having black skin and black curly hair and black eyes. The Asians, you don't really see much diversity within their race. So it is a huge genocidal scam. We've got plenty of diversity. No need for third world refuse for the most part. And that's what we're seeing coming in through the southern border, at least, and what's going into Europe and raping our beautiful women.
Yes. Yeah.
So let's talk about how your activism evolves from there. You started giving speaking engagements using the mantra. You also put out maybe a sign with your pipes. What happened from there? We know about what happened recently. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But what else were you doing?
Oh, it worked pretty well. I was learning the bagpipe, and bagpipe is loud and it's difficult to play. It's annoying when it's not played well. But still, as an enthusiast and a student, you know, I wanted to practice and to play. So I just started playing to moving traffic. I just started to get a sign and go out and stand beside the road at an intersection and play. And that way, you know, people would move. I could stand there for an hour and play, which is a long time to play a bag as a beginner. And, you know, it would really sound terrible, I'll be honest with you. And, you know, I would maybe know three songs or less, and I would just play them over and over and over again. But the audience moves through. They never really are around long enough so that they can understand that it didn't really occur to them that you really are crappy, that you just sound terrible, whatnot. So it was really great, and I liked it. It was amusing, and people liked it. You know, I would have people give me money, which I found really flattering. I mean, wow, I don't know. Were they giving me the money for the bagpipes or for the message? And I liked it. It made the time pass. And, it, practicing is kind of tedious, laborious, but it broke it up. And it still does. It kind of distracts me. I'm doing two things at once, and I'm not fully focused enough to really get nervous or self-conscious about my division. And I don't know. I just like the way they work together. That's how I started, just like that.
It also keeps you from being able to even respond to people because you're using your breath, your spirit to play those pipes. And that's the way that you're speaking and with the sign. It's a reason you can't respond, and your message is being seen and heard loud and clear. I think it's very effective. Now, what were you using on your sign at that time? What have been some of your go-to sayings?
Well, my earliest ones, that are, if I remember right, were anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, and the other one I had, it said, typing up about white genocide, and it had the URL for Horace's site, White Rabbit Radio.
All right. Well, you said that some people would even give you money. Was the general response was pretty good? Were there some incidents where people or police got involved and there were confrontations?
I wouldn't really call them confrontations, and maybe, you know, in maybe the one case that could have been a confrontation, it probably, you know, I could have avoided it. You know, I stepped into it a little bit. Thanks.
All right, sure. Mm-hmm.
That's it. The cops, you know, first of all, I found if I went always to the same place, then, you know, the cops could come. If I, you know, stayed, returned again, you know, day after day, week after week to the same area, the cops would come. And they did come to my first area there, and that's when they said, well, you can't. And that's the other thing. I would take money, and I would also hand out mantras. And in order to basically exchange things from the windows of cars, I would have to come off the curb. And that's when the police got involved. They said, you can't step off the curb. And I said, fine. And these are, by the way, these are what I'm handing out. Might want to look it over.
All right. So you have gotten press recently. When did this start taking place? When were they writing up stories about you?
It really went into high gear at Labor Day. And, you know, there was this organization called overpasses.org, and they had a campaign to impeach Obama, and they were standing on overpasses. And I thought, I want to look at this. I want to look at what they're doing. So I took a friend who was starting to be interested, someone that I had introduced to the mantra, and he was also interested. He's a beginning bagpiper. And we went together to a nearby town, and we looked at this overpasses.org, and we saw what they were doing and got the idea. And then on the way, coming back into town, he said, you know, I'd like to do this bridge here. And I said, well, what would you, if you did do this bridge, what message would you like to do? And he said, anti-racist is the code word for anti-white. And I said, you got it. I'll make the banner, and we'll do it. And that's what we did. When we called for another couple of guys in. We had four of us. And this has come up for my nation to talk about this. My wife, we had one of these carports. It's this canvas type of tent that you can park a car under. The wind had gotten it and torn it up a bit. So we cut it into strips, and my wife sewed them together, and we made this banner. It was a little over 40 feet long, and she sewed pockets into it at about every 10 feet. And these, I got some closet rod, and I would put them in those pockets or sleeves that were sewn in to the banner so that it could be, you know, held up. So it would kind of, we could, all we had to do really was just put one person on each pole and sort of keep in tension on it. But anyway, when we got up there on that bridge, there was just this perfect wind. I didn't even notice the wind was blowing at all. But the minute we rested those poles there, the wind just pushed the banner there. It was just perfect. You know, it just stood there like it was intended to be. And so, you know, we just started the party down a little bit and hand out mantras, and we didn't have to hold it. It held itself up there within the wind, and we stayed there for an hour and 45 minutes. I think about 2,500 cars, I estimated, went through there at that time, and we thought, wow, that's a lot. We really got the message out, man. 2,500 views we've got on this. And my wife went on the freeway, pulled off the shoulder, and took a photo. And we were just really happy and went home. And I put that photo out a couple places on the web. And then it was like overnight, someone, you know, I what happened? Oh, I don't even know how it happened. Someone, and they either were an anti-white or they posed as an anti-white, wrote this thing on Reddit that you're not going to believe. It was like, WTF, look what I saw on my way to work. And they photo, it was an Imgur, I-M-G-U-R. I don't know, maybe that's image hosting associated with Reddit. All right, well, by the time, before I even knew what was going on, I think it was Wednesday at the earliest, that thing had about 750,000 hits. Wow. And we were just like, oh, my gosh. You know, the 25, we thought we were so happy to have 2,500, and then we had 750,000. And then it was like, whoa, this is serious. I guess the news, the KVAL news, well, someone at Buzz did a news release on it. It was Lennox Lewis. And so, you know, I think the news, the television station, I think they were chagrined. I mean, I think they thought, holy smokes, this is our town. This thing's moving on 800,000 views, and, you know, we haven't even, you know, we need to do something. We need to, you know, do what we're supposed to be doing. We need to cover the news. This is too big and so forth. So they did this segment on it. And they tried to do the segment to, like, oh, there's been a crime committed. The person, you know, someone has committed an illegal act. And they had someone with the Department of Transportation and what have you. You know, and then they went to the NAACP and probably the SDLs, all these people that were saying how terrible it was and it was illegal. And then they said, so would the person, we want to be fair, will the person, you know, essentially that committed this criminal act, please come forward? And of course, you know, I was afraid. I didn't want to go forward and go, you know, okay. You know, I didn't want to turn myself in if it was legal, really. So I didn't. But then it came out that, you know, I figured out that it wasn't illegal, that they were just, you know, that they were just saying this. I don't know how. I sort of gradually came to that conclusion. I got more confidence. And the other thing, meanwhile, I had gone to Leaf and taken that same banner and been in Leaf, North Dakota. And, you know, I met Craig. I stayed with him there 4 days. And that guy is just, he's just fearless about the media. You know, he's just, he just really likes to exploit or try to exploit, you know, anti-white media. And I got a lot of confidence. I saw people, you know, coming in there from New York and big, you know, big outfits coming in, and he would just sit them down right there on the front of the house on the stoop and, you know, give these interviews. So I thought, you know, I can do this too. I said, came back to town, and I called up the television station, or I sent the lady an email, and I said, I want to talk now about this. And that's how I got my chance.
It was a pretty good segment they put forth. I didn't think it was all that hostile, considering some of the hit pieces that have been done, and recently some hit pieces have been written about you as well. Now, the banner wasn't illegal because it wasn't left up on that overpass and just tied there. Is that correct? Would it have been illegal if it had been fixed to the overpass?
I'm not really qualified to say. All I can say that it was not, there was no crime committed. If it was not,
okay.
I don't know what happens when it is attached. I can't say.
I'm guessing it's just much safer not to attach it, and instead what people can do is create a system, and it's pretty easy to be able to, you know, take a bucket with a little bit of concrete and a pole in it, and then attach the banner to these two buckets, you know, on each side, and have it pulled taut, and just have people there with the banners. Don't leave them. You want to be using these banners again and again, and you don't want to get arrested by the police. So that's a good way to do it, and you don't need to stay in the same location for too long. As you mentioned, when you're in the same place for, either multiple days, or in this instance, we're talking about maybe a few hours, people are going to catch on. Phone calls will be going and saying, there are some guys over there that are doing this. Why don't you try to hit a lot of different places with your message? I just feel like it's much safer doing it that way than just leaving banners attached places. I know it seems maybe a bit less incriminating because you're leaving, but think about all the cameras they have these days and other ways of finding out who did it. It'd be just much simpler to always stay with your signs when we're talking about these big banners.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the Bugs message. That's what Bugs has tried to do for us, is to really give us a message that we can stand beside, that we can feel okay about it. There's nothing. I mean, it's an honorable message, and we're honorable people, and it looks good to stand beside your words. Stay right there with them.
Yes,
and it feels
definitely
good. And it's it gives you courage when you do it time and time again, and it gives other people courage when they see that it can be done.
Well, we're going to get into some of the specifics about the White Man March probably in just a little bit, but first I wanted to cover some of the recent press you've gotten when you protested outside of a local school that was having a Martin Luther King Day march.
Yeah, and that's a little bit of a different there, because there, you see, we're not creating our own event. We're going to someone else's, and we think about it in a different way. And I really don't think of myself as having protested that event. I mean, it's easy to get into that, but then maybe that's I don't necessarily think, and I don't want to think, that just because people have some certain ideas about Martin Luther King that they are advocating white genocide. I don't think they might do that without knowing, but I don't think That's what their message is. So I wouldn't say that I really was protesting their event. Happy for them to have their event, and I'd really, if anything, I'd like to be seen as part of it. You know, they seem to be good, moral, upstanding people that are trying to do the right thing. Why wouldn't they help me stand up against white genocide? But that's not the way it turned out.
Now, I actually just have a small segment of the article here that I wanted to bring up, if that's all right with you, or at least one of these articles, because it just is so full of contradictions, just this small segment here that describes what happened that day. Do you mind if I go ahead and read a bit of this? I know you didn't want to get into dissecting the article, but I do feel this could be important.
Go for it.
All right. So this is the second paragraph in. This year, our celebration took a depressing turn. As we rounded the corner, we could see a man playing the bagpipes, dressed in traditional Scottish attire, and a woman holding a sign. Fellow marchers commented on how nice it was to have more music at our event. However, as we got closer to the two standing in front of the high school, we could see what the sign read. Diversity is a code word for white genocide. Our joyous group turned solemn as we looked at each other in shock. It was clear our Martin Luther King Jr. march was being protested by the same ideology MLK worked so hard to change. The people of the march got quiet and were visibly upset. Here we were, celebrating the man who fought so hard for freedom and peaceful demonstration. He fought for dignity and equality, inspired others to do the same. Still in 2014, there are people who still judge others for the color of their skin. Now, these last few lines are incredible. They're upset because they're saying Martin Luther King fought so hard for freedom and peaceful demonstration. Of course, he didn't do either of these things. He fought for the absolute opposite of freedom because there was no more freedom of association afterwards, and he did not peacefully demonstrate because he incited riots. But they do not like you peacefully demonstrating, working hard for freedom. And it is they who actually still judge others for the color of their skin. White people are discriminated against through affirmative action, through diversity quotas, through hate speech prosecution, and through polar bear hunting, and of course, this is now known as the knockout game. Basically, this person is saying that white people are not allowed freedom and peaceful demonstration. It's amazing.
Yes, it is. You did a good job explaining that. I hope that that's not too difficult for the readers to see.
Well, there's another line here. This is in reference to you. This is just as intrusive and offensive to our kids as gangs and bullying. Your piping and message is just as intrusive and offensive to our kids as gangs and bullying. Now, I'd like to break this one down because really, diversity, third world flooding of our countries is intrusive. Really. And then they come and form gangs and bully white people. You are the one sticking up for dignity and freedom and opposing gangs and bullying. And that is how they enforce their diversity agenda through the federal government, is through legal gangs and bullying, and often illegal ones that are run by Mr. Eric Holder. So it is really showing their true colors as white people and white children in particular are being victims of gangs and bullying, that they compare your music and statement to being intrusive and offensive. Oh, they need to get down off their high horses there, because they should be in the mud. They are not a group of enlightened warriors who are so upset that it's the image they put out of themselves is absurd when you consider the realities on the ground.
Yeah.
Now,
and it's
Jenny,
hard. I appreciate you, Kyle, you know, advocating for me and criticizing that article. It's much easier to hear you do it than I can to, you know, defend myself. I don't, you know, it's just, I mean, for you, you just see it in the abstract and kind of objectively. It's not really comfortable for me to just say, oh, they were bullying me and they do this and they do that. I don't, that doesn't,
well,
I
what
don't
have
care
they been
for
doing?
It. I like it.
They form gangs and bully you. That's what they do. Now, the good thing is that the bug swarm, well, this is something that they haven't really seen before. Let's say Jimmy Marr rolls pretty deep using their lingo. After they wrote these articles, they were flooded, just like they flood our countries, they were flooded with messages of support. So every single point that they try to make in their articles is easily refuted in the comment section. So they have to resort to closing them down. We will not see Jimmy Marr abused by their slander, by their hit pieces that they're running here. You have a lot of support, and it's good to know that there's somebody out there like you who's willing to go out into the streets and do this, because I really think this will inspire more and more people to do the same. And I think it's very powerful what you're doing, Jimmy.
Thank you. Yes, I hope it does catch on. And it looks, you know, the banner thing looks like it really is catching on, and that I'm really happy about that. A lot of potential, and you're doing a lot to help it along. This is it's great. I really appreciate it. I've got high hopes for it.
Well, thank you very much. Jimmy, how about we go to a song right here, and we'll come back in 4 minutes and discuss the White Man March, some of the ideas that you have for it, some of the ideas that I have for it, and some calls from the audience.
Perfect.
All
I'll
right.
talk to you in a few minutes.
Great. And it's whispered that soon, if we all call the tune, then the piper will lead us to reason, and a new day will dawn for those who stand long, and the forest will echo with laughter. Quoting Led Zeppelin there, of course. And before that, we had Albanach. I have Jimmy Moore with me tonight on the Blitzkrieg broadcast. Jimmy, welcome back. I just wanted to read the last closing line of that that hit piece I was referencing before, and it's touching. I was weeping tears of joyful diversity reading this one. My six-year-old multicultural nephew, who was studying Martin Luther King in school, put it this way: "See the top of my hand? It is brown like daddy. Now look at the color on the inside of my hand. It's white. That's the same as mommy. I am both. Martin Luther King made it okay for us to be together." Okay. White genocide, no? That's what's going on. We got a bunch of little multicultural nephews and sons and daughters running around. And white people are disappearing all the time. It's incredible how we see diversity causing white genocide all around, and yet a lot of people just can't seem to wrap their minds around this very simple formula. Jimmy, I hear you're going to be mayor.
Yeah, I could be. AFP has been, American Freedom Party, has been really helpful to me in looking around at the possibility of entering one or more, or optimizing what electoral contest could enter and I could use to get out the white genocide message. So I just want to publicly acknowledge their helpfulness. They've done a lot of research and made some suggestions, and we're looking into it.
So you're not too scared of the articles that they'll keep publishing about you then? It seems you have some thick skin.
I don't know how to – I'm very sensitive, actually, but I'm not ashamed of anything I've done. So it's not a matter of
skin. You're not scared. You're not intimidated. You're not being bullied.
No, I'm not intimidated in the least. And I'm not ashamed. Everything that I've said is true and right, and I'll say it again. The only reason I'm not saying those things is I know a better way. So I'm not going to get bogged down in going over that material again and again and again, because it's not the most useful use of our time. So, you know, I'm not going to be distracted by it. I'm going to keep on the white genocide message. But, no, I'm not scared in the least stuff, and I'm not embarrassed.
Now, I know it must not be pleasant for you to be in this position where you're having these articles, where you live as well, being written about you. But you are a lightning rod there, and I think that them responding in the ways that they have is actually to our benefit. I think this is great news, and it does help our agenda.
Well, I hope you're right. Sometimes to tell, you know, because more honestly, it's not, I really, you know, I enjoy publicity. Like I say, I don't have a problem with it. I'm not embarrassed by what they say. I think it's fairly transparent and whatnot. Now, you know, the problem would be is if I enjoy the publicity too much and I'm doing it, you know, we saw this with Craig Cobb, you know, there gets to be a limit between, you know, just being a publicity hound and getting something done. And that's what I have to watch out for. Now, that's where I have to divide my time and make sure that I'm doing it. And we don't always know, you know. Here again, I'll go back to Craig Cobb. You don't know when you do a publicity stunt what's going to happen. You can't really predict what it'll do. So you just have to try. And you try to ride it, you know, once it gets going.
Well, we have quite the publicity stunt coming up here with the White Man March. I think if we execute this correctly, if it's done successfully, at least in a majority of the different locations, will have a huge effect. We have no way of knowing how the media will respond, if really at all. I think that they will, but I would like to get your advice for people who are planning on going out there and demonstrating on this day as to how we can be most successful.
Well, the most important thing that I would say to people is figure on not getting any media attention. Figure on you've got to, you know, consider yourself a media person. You are the media. You're creating and you're producing a media event. And there are people in our movement that will help you if you get the raw material. So pick a nice place. Pick a place where you can make some nice photos that are visually. Think, if you can, about going to a recognizable, you know, a site of historical importance, you know, like that arch in St. Louis or something that's famous in your area. You know, if you were in Paris, you'd want to do this at the Eiffel Tower.
Jimmy, I gotta say, you and I are in complete synchronicity here, because I was thinking of the St. Louis Arch as well. I was just imagining a massive banner being hung on the arch itself, but I don't think that we're there yet. Maybe one day when we get a little bit more control of our lands, perhaps. But I think that you're making a great point here. We need to actually do what we can to ensure that we are the ones getting the exclusive footage, the exclusive photographs. We don't want the media to be in that position where they can use their selection of images, or they can distort them. We want to be the people who are capturing the event. And I think that in this way, we'll be able to much better control the message.
Just reminds me of those dancing Israelis, remember? We were there to document the event. That's
right.
The way to think. You know, we go, we make these events, and we're there to document them. And then, you know, hopefully they take off, and, you know, the other media is essentially jealous. I mean, we've got the story. I mean, look at that story in the Eugene Weekly, the first one. 1,200 comments. Never in the history of the Eugene Weekly have they had anything like that. You know, at some point, they, you know, they have to think about making a profit. They can't just continue producing news that people have no interest in and stay in business.
Yeah, they will soon realize, they're realizing that this is a hot topic. And if they want to stay relevant, they're going to have to cover it. Of course, they're spinning these stories. It doesn't seem like they're doing us any favors whatsoever, because they're not. But the fact that they're covering them means that we are having an effect. We are the ones who are now defining the message. Because there are people like Jimmy Mark going out there and doing this, it is increasing the amount of people who have seen the mantra many-fold.
Right. It's people like me that do it and people like you that then cover it. And then, you know, then we've got, I don't know what you call it, we're going vertical or whatever. We control the whole thing. And they have to, you know, they can't continue to ignore us and stay in business, because we're getting too much market share.
That's right. They don't like this whatsoever. People are tuning out from television. Sure, people will be watching the big game, but what, they still haven't sold a lot of the tickets, I don't think. It's just the breads and circuses of a collapsing Jewish empire. And
yeah.
people are looking for something that's real. People are looking for something that is a bit rebellious, that goes against the mainstream. I don't think a lot of people liked it when the Tea Party was hijacked by people like Sarah Palin or Bill O'Reilly or whoever was trying to get on that bandwagon, Glenn Beck or something. People want a genuine movement with genuine people in it who are passionate about what they're doing and have have a sense of righteousness about it too. They're not ashamed. They're not scared of their beliefs. They want to get everybody reading what they believe. This is the essence of what we're doing. We are so adamant about what we believe that we're going out there and doing anything possible to get as many people as humanly possible reading this message. And it is growing exponentially, I think. And the more and more it gets out there, of course, the bigger and bigger the swarm, at least for the bugs people, is getting. And it's just there are so many different levels to this, and people are attacking this issue from a number of different sides as well. And the more and more that people realize a genocide is taking place, of course, the more and more they're going to do things to prevent it, to stop it.
Right.
People get
and
passionate about
it.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I think that mainly means when they're going to stop it, they're going to get on the bandwagon. They're going to, you know, get a drum like that Albanach, you know, that tribal drumming. You know, that's what I really want to hear is some white guys with some drums doing a drumming circle of our own stuff. But whatever it is, you know, cultural media, whatever, and a sign to get out there and start doing it. And the important, we don't have to be that big. I mean, you know, not to be, you know, self-inflating, but look at what I've done. Just one guy with this musical instrument, and I probably could have done it just with the sign and as the instrument. We don't need massive numbers of people if we're all on the same message. That's the key, the consistent message. It appears much, much bigger, and it appears to be a naturally occurring groundswell, because in fact it is. But it all says the same thing. When it's the same message, then it looks like a huge right-wing conspiracy. You know, it's coming out everywhere. It's coming out in Australia, New Zealand, England, United States. And it's the same message, so it looks like it's the same organization. But we don't have the overhead of a giant media organization. You know, we're just independent people who are starting to stand up and do these things. And it's very small in a sense that it's just individuals, but it looks really big.
Well, you mentioned not wanting to be self-inflating. I just think you're a pretty clever guy there, especially since you play the bagpipes talking about being self-inflating. But what you're saying there is that you don't need a whole lot of people to make a whole lot of noise. And this is one of the things that the Scots used to intimidate their foes, was they had people playing the pipes and banging on the drums, and it scared the hell out of their enemies. Of course, if they were fighting each other, which they often did, they'd both have the pipes and the drums going as well. But it was, I guess, who could ever make the larger clamor. Now, this is essential, what you're saying here. Basically, being able to use these tools that amplify our voice, our breath, our spirit, and hit the right notes. That's key as well. It can't just be an absolute chaotic mess. It's got to have some rhythm, some order, some melody to it, and that's what we're trying to do here. I had written recently that I think wearing all white for most people would be a great idea. Now, if there are other people who have, let's say, different costumes or ethnic dress, for example, the kilt and the bagpipes, then by all means, let's celebrate our European diversity, our white culture. But some people obviously either don't have all white, don't want to wear all white. You expressed to me that you'd prefer not being all white, but I think that it doesn't matter if everyone is in all white. If most people are, that sends a good message. And the real key is to look your best. But I think that if you're not going to wear all white, and when I say all white, I'm saying you could wear khakis and a good dress shirt, maybe even a light jacket. Look good. That's the key. And Let's stay away from paramilitary uniforms. On this occasion, I don't think it is the best public relations. What do you think about uniforms, costumes, and the rest, Jimmy?
The message is the uniform. That's going to be the uniform aspect of what we do. And if the message is uniform, we don't have to be. So that gets, sure, let's go for the European diversity. And I think it's a good idea. Let's make it in light colors. It's happy. It's festive. It's March. It'll be spring in a lot of parts of the country. So I think it's a grand idea. And I'm going to do it.
You don't want to have, say, armbands or anything that can also identify you as part of the group necessarily. You're just a person out with a nice white dress shirt on wearing khakis in March. What's wrong with that? I think it's good not to have one particular uniform, let's say, and just let people kind of do their own thing, but let's keep it classy. I really think we should be looking kind of like angels here with the white colors. But as I said, I can't tell people what to wear. I am not in charge of I can suggest things, but I cannot require anything of anyone. People are going to do things of their own free will. That's the essence of independent people coming together to work on this project. I just think it'd be great if we have the same message or a similar message, and also are looking similar. So it will make a huge statement seeing it all across the world as well. Wow, white people are really starting to step up. I think it's unprecedented. Can you think of anything that was ever done quite like this?
Think of anything?
Why hasn't it been done?
Well, it's not done yet, so we can't. We're just comparing your conception of it to what we get. And that brings me to another thing, because, as I've said, I've worked a lot by myself or in very small groups, and there's a lot to be said for that. You can make a big statement, and it actually is kind of cool when just a couple guys or one guy do something. I get a little more, there's more stress and tension and unknowns, bigger we try to make the group. Like, I'm working on a pretty big, or I should say we are, and we got a pretty good group for White Man March coming up. And, I'm concerned about it because it's a bigger type of operation and there's a lot of coordination. And I just, what I keep telling myself is, look, if it starts going sideways, if it starts being a problem, just break it out. Let people go their own way. Don't get in. Don't get so, tied up in the idea that you we've got to get a lot of guys. We've got to make it look big. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that because, it's going to, you're going to get some no-shows or whatnot, Don't worry about it.
You're bringing up a good point here. You don't want to take just anybody. Somebody in your local area contacts you and says, hey, I'm really excited about White Man March. Let's get this going. Yeah, sure, maybe meet with them, but you can't just I don't want people to be subverted. If you've got a good group of people you work with, you just want to work by yourself, it's probably safer that way. We could probably have a better spread of the country if it was like that. If people want to get together and do things in concert with larger groups, do it and be safe. But we don't necessarily need that. The march is happening all across the globe. The march is where you are, where you're walking, or rather where you are standing, where you're making your stand. It doesn't necessarily need to be, masses of people in one particular location.
Right. And if what you were saying about subversives, let's say you're getting ready, getting a kind of a big event, and you realize you've been subverted, you get there, and there's Antifa. Now, you don't, split up and roll off. Don't give up. Just split up, go your separate ways, and do, separate events in another spot. And be a little bit prepared. Keep your mind open to that. You go somewhere, you got a pretty big group, and it looks like somebody leaked it, and, you know, there's people there that are going to harass you and whatnot, break it up. Just break up, and some of you go one way and some the other, and do a few little things that they can't, you know, make trouble on. But do something, you know what I mean? And don't get into a fight with them. Just have backup plans or create some right on the spot.
Right. Be willing to improvise. That's the key here. You can't just be stuck to one specific master plan. And that's why I think this is going to be a bit different than previous marches. We're kind of going to wing it. I do not know everything that everyone has planned all across the globe. I know there are people who have brought things up to me, but I have no way of knowing what is going to be taking place in the United States and in other white countries, or maybe even non-white countries. I don't know, and I don't want to know. That's another key right there.
Right. Yeah.
Keep it to yourselves. You don't need to tell me, but send the footage. Get great footage, get awesome pictures, and then let's start upload them yourself if you want, but also then post them over at whitemanmarch.com, and we'll compile them all. It will be it'll be great to then see all of the different events coming together. That will be really something that lives well beyond March 15th itself. It's just all of the archived media from that day.
Right. And, you know, for those that are inclined, if you want to, you know, instead of just compiling them, I mean, do that anyway. Let's centralize the things and produce our own media. But if you want to try to get media attention, consider using the anti-white stance. Just consider being outraged and calling up, you know, a news outlet and said, you know, they're white supremacists, you know, standing on my corner, or something like that. And, I took a picture of it. Just send it in, you know, and act like you're reporting it, because these people, you know, they're so filled with hubris, they don't even understand, and they'll carry your water for you, and by the time they're done and by the time the swarm gets done with them, they won't know what hit them.
Yeah, I think that is that's great. You've got an amazing point I overlooked there, is that people need to pretend like they are anti-whites at certain points to be able to get the media covering these stories. Pretending to be anti-whites can be very effective, and I think this is what the Swarm has done in a number of different occasions to get the word out there, because it's less likely to be censored that way than, say, if somebody writes up an article glorifying what is being done, you know, on, say, Reddit or Dig or something, but instead, you know, is over-the-top anti-white.
Right, get them to take the bait and then go right away to Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar and put it up on the Swarm as soon as they post something, and then we'll watch the fun begin. Because in my opinion, those guys are amazing. I hope that it rubs off on me. I'm not really a great bugger, you know. I'm not really great with the mantra. I'm just kind of great at doing the publicity stunts that call them in, and then I'm just amazed. It's like calling in our killers. Anti-white, you know, just let them, they come after you with their bullies, and then they just get slapped around, publicly humiliated. Don't you agree, Kyle? You've seen it.
Haven't you?
Like,
amazing.
At the Weekly, aren't they just terrific?
Oh, yeah, it's amazing what they're able to do. And I think it's not always just bugs people, because I see these comments everywhere on so many different news stories. I know they're covering the top ones. They probably are watching Drudge Report to see what's there. But I'm just seeing this message in general, not just the mantra, but this mindset everywhere now. People are really starting to wake up. They need a little extra push for them to see what's really going on.
Well, we've got that push coming here with White Man March. I'm really hopeful. Yeah.
I am as well, especially having people such as yourself advising here and participating as well. I want to open up the phone lines. The number is 347-633-9657. Again, 347-633-9657. Jimmy, any other points you want to make about the White Man March, perhaps what you might be doing, what you suggest some other people could do? I've heard a lot of good suggestions from people out there over at whitemanmarch.com and elsewhere, saying different things that could be done or what they might be doing. One of the things I saw suggested was somebody had said that what we should do is have somebody holding a sign, honk if you oppose genocide, before cars get to diversity equals white genocide banner. So people say, hey, I oppose genocide, honk, honk. They drive a little bit further, and they see diversity equals white genocide. And, course, they want to oppose genocide. Oh, that was you. Was that you who suggested that, Jimmy?
No. But I can see it's an excellent idea. My comment was, it's hard to unhonk.
Right.
After they've honked, they've agreed, they can't. What are they going to do? I mean, you have to confront their hypocrisy. Or maybe maybe they're off message already. But, they've agreed in that they're against genocide, and then they see that it's white, and it's like, oh, what am I going to do?
Right. I think also using the dialectic against them is good as well. Just as they do, grouping people into anti-white and pro-white. So you could have honk if you're pro-white, as John Friend suggested, and then maybe honk twice if you're anti-white, or don't honk at all. So honk if you're pro-white. Maybe what you do is you cause the people who are anti-white to honk. Don't do anything if you're pro-white. Honk if you're anti-white. So we'll get the anti-whites identified and see how many people sit there and agree that, yes, they are pro-white because they're not honking. That could be interesting. But, yeah, that one was put forth by John Friend. There are many different ways to engage the audience out there and also have some fun. They put out a whole assortment of clowns for us in their Jewish media. I think we could also clown around a little bit as well.
Yeah, I hope it's a fun day for everybody.
Yeah.
It'd be nice. I'd like to see some kids out there, when it's, if it's safe, if you're in a pretty, I'm in a pretty safe area. We've had kids out with us. I don't know if you saw that one video. We were in Salem with a little boy. Just so cute. I like it a lot. I know some people feel like it's irresponsible. So you have to make the determination about your area, but they really can be an asset. They're such adorable little people.
Right, and
women,
of course,
women and children.
Right, yeah, the women could very well help as well for our image. We need women out there supporting us, and this is where it differs from some of the older marches where they have these big marches planned, and there's a whole lot of opposition. You don't want to put your women out in harm's way, and they wouldn't often either. Some of those tough girls would be out there anyway with swastikas on and getting rowdy. But what I'm saying here is that we don't need to have that. Let's have our women looking like angels in white and have no confrontation whatsoever.
Right. Yeah, that's certainly the objective. That's what we want to do.
Some people, it seems, in the past, are just kind of...
I'm sorry, Kyle. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, it seems sometimes people were looking to actually have the confrontation. That's what they were going there for, instead of actually to be effective, to make a point, to further your cause. And what were you going to say there, Jimmy?
Well, let me just, before I get to that, I just want to say, yeah, you're right about what you say. You know, it's fun. There's, you know, it's fun to have a confrontation, but that's not what this is about. And let's just, you know, we really need to start being serious now. We're talking serious about it. It's genocide. It's, you know, we have to think about, you know, making the very best possible impression and not having fun by getting in a confrontation. You know, it is fun. I'm the first to admit it's great. It's an electrical charge, but, you know, we should not do that in this particular case at all, please. Because this thing's getting serious. This really is, you know, what you'll find is the more you use the white genocide message, you come to understand that it becomes very real. Propaganda is effective, on all of us. And our propaganda is true, but when I first started with the message, I thought it was a tactical. I thought, oh, this is clever. I'm going to do this. Well, you know, for a while, it becomes very, very real and much less about the fun of being in a confrontation. It really becomes about stopping genocide. It's a real thing. Now, the other thing that I was going to say is, you know, I really enjoy, first of all, there's a couple things I enjoy. I enjoy being older, you know, and therefore not tough, not threatening, and I enjoy doing it with my wife. You know, we're an older couple. We have grandchildren. You know, I think it's a great, it's very difficult to attack us because they look like the bullies they are, because we're nice old people that care about, you know, future generations. So anyway, you know, that's a women, children, if you can, you know, don't put them at risk, you know, be cautious, but also adventurous, and bear in mind that this is an effective image for us. Clothing, nice family look, opposing genocide. It's very difficult to attack them, that message, and messengers that look nice like that and conduct themselves with dignity.
Well, Jimmy, I already got a comment on this show from somebody who was apparently laughing when I referred to costumes before. I did not mean to denigrate the amazing kilt and the Scottish ethnic dress as just being a costume. I actually have a pretty expensive one myself, and I was referencing more such as the lederhosen and other such things. It's a kind of a shorthand for me to say all the different things people could be wearing that are not normal in everyday life here in America. That's why I reference them as costumes, and perhaps it was my my background in theater, let's say. Jimmy, what about going to a song here and seeing if anybody wants to call in on the other side? Otherwise, we'll wrap it up, and I'll definitely keep in touch with you, and we'll figure out different ways we can work together again, hopefully.
Okay, perfect.
All right, so I'll talk to you in just a little bit, and hopefully we'll have some callers on the line to ask you some questions or give you some feedback.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Welcome back to the Blitzkrieg broadcast. I have Jimmy Marr here with me. And another comment, which I'll read out in the air because I think it is important. Remind folks to be asking anti-whites the questions if confronted. This is central to our MO. If diversity is so grand, then why do you only demand it in every white country, etc.? If America is so free, then why aren't whites free to live and work together? If America celebrates diversity, then why aren't Europeans allowed to immigrate and assimilate? If America is so tolerant, then why aren't white countries tolerated? Are you pro-white or pro-white genocide? So asking the questions of your enemy, this is a very simple tactic, and it's used against us all the time. They never want to answer for white genocide. They just want to ask, oh, why are you a white supremacist? Why do you hate everyone? So we have to turn the tables on them. Jimmy, we have some calls on the line. Wow, looks like we've got a lot now. Let's go to the board. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Who is this?
Yeah, it's Formal Nation. How y'all doing tonight?
Doing well, thanks. Welcome to the show.
Good. I was just going to make a few quick comments. What's up, buddy? What's up, Jimmy?
Hi. It's great to hear from you. What do you want?
I was just going to make a couple comments here. I think Jimmy is sets a real good example with his activism and everything. When he put that anti-racist as a co-word for anti-white banner up, and they did the news interview and everything. I don't know if everybody's seen that, but he was dressed up in a suit and tie. I mean, he was looking real sharp. And, I think that a lot of people could take an example from that. Is that on YouTube, Jimmy? Is there a name that somebody could type in and look that one up?
Yeah, I think it's on there. If you type in my name and Mark Potok, those are the cats that I remember.
Mark Potok had said something, and it was just gold. He had said something like, "Well, what this message is trying to say is that if you're opposed to racism, you might as well say let's go ahead and destroy the white race." And I thought that was just beautiful, the way that we're leading the conversation like that these days. It used to be always attack mode on their side against us, and now we're attacking them, and they're having to answer to everything that we want to bring up, and that's the brilliance of a consistent message and everything. Anyway, things are really starting to snowball and happen quick with the bug stuff. I noticed it was kind of funny on that video. You guys should look that up. Jimmy Marr and Mark Potok, I guess, on YouTube. Maybe somebody could post that in the chat. But even that, there was like this good-looking blonde reporter. And if you just look at somebody was talking about it on bugs, and it's really true. If you look at just kind of the body language of when she was interviewing Jimmy, she seemed just kind of nonchalant and just kind of, relaxed and everything. And then this anti-white comes on there. Of course, they had to have that side of the argument or whatever. She's got her arms crossed. And she's got this sour look on her face, so it was kind of funny. And I tell you what, speaking of the women and all that, I know that you guys have a women's show on this network and everything, but I've seen a lot of women coming into the pro-white side of stuff when it comes to the mantra. There's been a long time, I mean, at least a few years ago, that Teutonic Warrior chick got on message real quick. And then that Stop White Genocide video, just a bunch of these girls just out of nowhere hopping on message real quick, you know what I mean? I think women have a certain intuition, and they can see when something is like a winning strategy. I mean, they just kind of intuitively know that much more than men do.
Well, And they're great at communicating the message. Laura's video, this is the woman who was on the women's show on Sunday, a couple Sundays back, with the Australian accent. It's just her speaking truth in a few minutes, and one of those videos has 30,000 views. It's it
That's
really
right.
helps to get the message out there, and people such as her, such as the other women who did the their Stop White Genocide video. It's just incredible. This is perfect. They've used women against white men for so long, divided them against us with other minority groups, and having them on our side, it makes the message much harder to attack. They can attack us as these evil, racist, bigoted bastards, but women, it's not so easy, especially women with children who just want to see a safe place for their children to live. This pulls at your heartstrings. It's not some evil hater Nazi out there on the streets with a bullhorn or something in a paramilitary uniform. It's not as easy to dismiss as that. And it's beautiful. I love seeing more and more women getting involved. And I think that they like the approach of the mantra because it's fairly anonymous, except for those who decide to really make themselves public. It's pretty easy to do. And it's not all that extreme. It's very straightforward. It's not illegal to post it. It's not even hate speech, whatever they're going to define as hate speech now. It's not that. It's very effective. Jimmy, anything to say to Drew, and then I'll go back to Drew and then get to some other callers here.
No, I think you guys covered it. Just thanks a lot for calling in. It's really nice to hear you.
It's great to talk to you too, Jimmy. And speaking of Laura, she's actually going to be on the political cesspool tomorrow night, I believe, and it starts at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So everybody tune in to the political cesspool, and you can go to thepoliticalcesspool.org to see more about that show. It's James Edwards, and he's a longtime pro-white guy, and he's actually on the airwaves of not just internet radio, but broadcasts, you know, traditional, what do they call it, terrestrial radio, whatever. But, yeah, so, and also, I guess, speaking of, on the subject of women, I guess it seems like your wife, Jimmy, is really behind you in all this, standing out there holding up that sign and everything. I mean, maybe there's something you could tell us about how you brought her on message.
Well, what makes you think she didn't bring me on?
Well, this is true. It's true, exactly.
You know,
so
she's a force to be dealt with. That's about all I'll say about that. Now I don't have to put her on anything. If anything, it probably works the other way around. She's a quite a gal. You know, when I got up, she's like, okay, well, what took you so long? Finally figured it out, did you?
Wow. Well, it's, you know, exactly. I guess that kind of reinforces the point earlier, you know, about, you know, women when they see this kind of, you know, they can tell a winner from a loser. And I think with the mantra and everything, it's finally a winning strategy for the pro-life struggle and all that. You know, I'm thrilled to see all these people all these girls coming on board and everything. Anyway, I'm going to maybe mention to Horace, Jimmy, that he should put you in his next animation or something like that. Because I tell you what, buddy, with all the stuff you're doing, you know, it's like the lyrics from Led Zeppelin or whatever Kyle quoted earlier. You're going to be like a legend, man. I can see it already.
Thanks. Yeah, it'd be nice to have an animated Piper.
Great work, guys, and let's keep on pulling people over to the bugs approach, the mantra approach and all that. That's about everything I've got, so if you want to mute me, Kyle, I'll just listen on the phone, and
right.
You guys have a good night.
Thanks a lot for my nation there calling in. Let's go to the next person here. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Who is this?
This is Black Helicopter Radio, or also known as Groid Copter, in the chat room.
Welcome.
Can you guys hear me all right?
Yes, hear you just fine. Any questions, comments?
Yeah, I wanted to kind of ask Jimmy what it was like when he first got involved and kind of, you know, came out as a pro-white, you know, essentially a heretic when you're going against the anti-white establishment, and how it affected his life. I think one of the biggest things keeping us aligned here in the USA is because we don't have some of these hate speech laws like they have in other countries, but the establishment can use things like economic terrorism, you know, like what happened with John Friend. You know, you can lose your job and just how he conjured up the courage basically to come out, you know, openly as being pro white against this anti white establishment.
I think as I mentioned before, I was a house husband, so I wasn't the primary breadwinner. And we were at very nearly, when I started, at retirement level, and we've since retired. We've been able to retire. So they can't take my lunch money, and that's part of the, you know, that obviously enables me to do that. And I don't know quite how to answer what other factors might have been, but it's part of my personality to go against the grain when I see it, that it's wrong. I've had a lifelong tendency to not hesitate to oppose a common fallacy. I think that's about.
Well, as somebody said, you're just a legend. So that was somebody in the chat room saying that you're already a legend, and that's what such people do. Anything else you wanted to ask of Jimmy tonight?
Just one last question, and then I'll just go ahead and listen. Would you say you get better results talking with like baby boomer generation, or maybe more the young people, or is it just kind of even, you know, just different people react differently, you can't find any patterns, or where do you get better reception?
That's really difficult for me to answer. I can tell you what, from my point of view, you know, I much prefer to connect with the young people. So I can't say that happens more. I mean, maybe it does. Those are always the things that I remember because they mean a lot to me. So I don't know if it happens more or I just remember them more. I can't really say. It might just be luck of the draw, who happens to be around at the time. You know, we'll accept the handout, you know, and we'll take a mantra and read it and talk about it. If anything, I'm just going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say, I think it's the young people. I do. My hope is with the young people, and I respond better. Are we connected still?
Oh, yeah, it's all right. I don't know if Kyle's still here, but that's fine. That's awesome. I don't know. It's kind of strange. I find this. There's a big difference when I talk to some older folks and younger folks, because I think maybe the younger folks have been almost too propagandized to a point where they're kind of rebelling against it, kind of like what Kyle mentioned earlier in the show, but maybe like the older generation, like my parents' generation, didn't have it quite as hardcore. The anti-white brainwashing pounded in their head, so they might go along with it a little bit better. But, it's just interesting.
How old are you?
I'm 25.
Oh, see, that's so nice. I just love hearing that. Love hearing it. It really gives me hope. And I think
another,
you're right. I think.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, like my dad's generation. He literally, and it was like, I think he was like 15 when he first saw non-white. He was, you know, he's like on a a farm community up in Idaho, but for me, I was only one of five white kids in a class in the Bay Area in California. Literally, I mean, that's not an exaggeration. It's like 25 Hispanics and other non-whites and five whites. And I think the brainwashing was so intense in the Bay Area in California for me, I just kind of, maybe in a reactionary sort of way, just rebelled against it with everything in my power that I could at this point. You know, I just, because I remember they're doing the Holocaust propaganda all the way back in third grade, which is mind-blowing to think about.
Yeah, yeah. What you said reminds me of a younger man that I talked to, and he understood the Holly hoax. And I said, how did you come to see through this? And he's from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And he said, I could tell by the lies they were telling us about Negroes. I could see what they told us about Negroes, and I could see how they were behaving in my life. And I realized that it was a lie. And once I saw that lie, it caused me to understand that the Holocaust was a lie. I mean, I found that to be really unbelievable. It fits in with what you said about the heavy Holocaust indoctrination that you got in third grade. And it goes right along with the African propaganda.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for the call, Groid Copter. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the call board here. We're lining up to get on the show. Oh, welcome, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, Kyle and Jimmy. I was listening to your bagpipe music there.
That wasn't Jimmy's, but yes, that was bagpipe music. I just want to make that clear. I don't have any recording of Jimmy's music, and wasn't played tonight. But Frank, welcome, and please continue.
Well, I was listening to the bagpipe music, and just noticing how evocative and appropriate to his message it is, particularly since you have that ting, single, droning note with the bagpipe music that provides the steady background. And I was thinking that could be said to symbolize that one note droning in the background can perhaps be said to symbolize our one people of European heritage, whereas you have your melody, you know, your variations, your diversity of notes sort of dancing around that single drone. And that, of course, can symbolize the diversity of our people. So I was just musing on how perfect that music matches your message.
Deep thoughts,
Frank. Oh, thank you. That's a good metaphor.
And, I'd love to hear your actual playing sometime. Maybe that's in the works.
Yeah, I'd like to do something. Maybe with Siegfried sometime. You know, I'd like to, if we could record something. I like his taste in music. I've recently gotten some electronic bagpipes, and they can play in different keys, in minor keys and whatnot. I could get into maybe some medieval stuff is what I'd like to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something, that would be great. There's something about ancient music, even pre-medieval for me, that just, it has some sort of effect on me that more modern music doesn't have. I was listening to, Kyle, you played a piece during that show you did with Dana of the Viking harp. It was just one lone harp, and wow, what a piece. I'm surprised it didn't get more commentary.
Yeah, with The Lyre.
The Lyre, right.
Yeah,
L-Y-R-E.
The Lyre. I love it.
From which we derive the word lyrics, because, of course, the words that were spoken and sung to the accompaniment of the lyre were lyrics. That was a great piece. Where did you acquire that, might I ask?
Off of YouTube, where I get most of my music, just doing searches sometimes for pagan folk playlists or Norse Celtic playlists and other such variations. Pulling up some of these songs that are on YouTube and then taking the MP3 from it.
Well, I don't want to stray too far afield from Jimmy,
I think
your guest there,
though.
And his message.
Yeah. I think that's important. Yeah. The music that we associate ourselves with, even, you know, if you're doing a slideshow of images or footage, what music are you putting underneath it? This is very important, or rather over top of it. It sends a huge message. And if we're going to be, I think, successful, we've got to return to some of the ways of our folk. And this would include traditional music.
Absolutely. Well, all right, I'm enjoying the show, and I'm going to take off and listen to the rest of it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for the call, Frank.
Thanks, Frank.
Take care.
All right, next caller here. Well, welcome to the show. Who is this?
Hey, mate. I'm just calling up. I just wanted to let you know that I think what y'all are doing is a damn disgrace to the Scottish nation.
That doesn't sound like a very good accent to me, but
yeah,
go ahead.
Well,
yeah, try again.
You're all right, man. Yeah, sorry, I was joking about that. Anyway, my name's Matt. I'm not in the comments.
this guy again. wow, he is a super troll. He called back in a different number that I didn't recognize. I know not to answer his usual number. Wow, that's interesting. let's go to this next person here, see if they have anything to add. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Kyle, this is Tom.
Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Hey, for Jimmy, briefly, I really, you know, I'm inspired actually by your courage. Could you please give us a short sort of a lessons learned type of a debrief, maybe with, you know, some legal guidelines and tips that might help some of us to avoid a problem as the White Man March approaches?
Jimmy.
Well,
I'm thinking
about it. Try not to be afraid or try not to let your fear cause you to, I don't know how to say it. Basically, don't go out there, armed, really. Figure out if you're, you know, most of us have been beaten up, you know, a time or two. And it's just a lot better to take a whipping for the cause than it is to shoot somebody or to really, you know, take them out, even if they deserve it.
Well, I wasn't really, you know, asking in terms of, you know, a physical fight. I was wondering more along the lines. I guess you mentioned something about not stepping off the curb when you were playing, for example, that kind of thing. Was there anything else that maybe you were able to glean from any interactions with the police?
Yeah, well, you know, they're going to warn you about something small like that. The thing I would say that could be a problem, particularly if you're, you know, really were in a busy place with some high speed. Don't use a sign or anything like a flag that you would wave. Don't want to be confused with a traffic flag, or you don't want to cause a traffic accident or even be, you know, part of the chain of causation that might happen in a, you know, in a multiple car pileup. You know, people, they can be distracted, so get some attention, but do it in a way where it's optional, definitely optional for the motorists, and let them be safe.
Okay, that makes sense. And the only other thing I really have to say is a big thanks to Kyle for having his finger on the pulse with the promotion of this idea. I think that's fantastic. He's taken a page out of the Jewish Bolshevik playbook and turned it right around on him. This is, you know, it's a stroke of genius, man. It's catching fire, too.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And I think it's an idea whose time has come here. And I thank everybody else out there, of course, for making it the reality. I couldn't obviously do any of this just by myself. This is all dependent upon all the great people who have donated to the drive, who are willing to work with us to get these banners out there, to just do something, do anything. I'm really very excited for it. I think it will be game-changing in some ways. I don't want to get overconfident about it. A lot of time between now and then, but I'm very optimistic. I see so much energy from everyone out there who has picked up this message, run with it, gotten really active in terms of advocating for their rights, for their race. And it really is the most noble thing you can do to protect your children, to protect your family, to protect your cousins and protect your larger race from extinction, from the hands of people who want to see them raped, bloodied, tortured, murdered. This has happened before in the USSR, in a number of different places around the world. And the people who are in control right now seem to be talking about how great it is to see all the white people in the movie killed, or whatever other things they have said that are just so atrocious and really just inciting genocide against us. And that's what's happening, and that's why we're opposing it. Tom, any other thoughts tonight or questions for Jimmy?
No, just one comment. Your understanding of the way the Jews operate is key here. You know, when I looked at, you know, in studying history and the way that the Jews have planned their various revolutions, I noticed that to incite the masses and to get, you know, a large quantity of people, you know, sort of marching in lockstep, they wouldn't use any sort of negative imagery or wording. They would go to things like summer of love, revolution of love, you know, love, celebrate, those kinds of words. And I think we can use those things against them.
Yeah, we love our race.
Exactly. You can't fight against that. How are you gonna counter that? They try to associate us with negative words. That's just one of the things that they do. Just your observation, but thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom. Simple that putting out that you love your race as opposed to that you hate everyone else is a more effective strategy. Who would have thought, right?
That one does work. It does. It's very powerful.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's a huge recruitment tool. Love your race. It's a
How about
command.
A sign that says White History Month, a heart with white culture, a heart with white people, love white people? Or how about a sign that says Equal Rights for European Americans? I mean, you
Fantastic.
Know, that's going to piss them off.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do think so. It already is. And Jimmy's a living, breathing example of that. They get really pissed off when we just
they do,
because
they know that you understand the game. That's what the anger is. It's like, oh my God, Kyle's using our shtick against us. This, you know, Jimmy, he's out there like playing. You know, he's doing the same exact thing to them that they're doing to us.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Well, Tom, thanks again. Appreciate you calling in, and
thanks, Tom.
We'll be talking again soon.
Right,
I'll announce that. I think it might be this upcoming Tuesday, if you're still good for that.
No problem, man.
All right, great. All right, Jimmy, it's been a great show thus far. We're going just a few minutes here into the overtime. I just wanted to give you the last word tonight. Any final thoughts for us as we march forth on March 15th?
Well, Tom made some good suggestions of some slogans, but I'd like to bring us back to the idea of a consistent message, and I think we've covered the reasons why we'd really like to go with that. So, you know, it's good to be creative and everything, and there's a time and place for everything, but if we could focus on diversity equals white genocide for this, or things that are closely related to it, that's what I'd like to do. And that's, you know, of course, that is love. When you're willing to oppose and speak out against the genocide of your people, that's love at the root.
Well, Jimmy, some people are planning literature distribution. So I think that some of these different sayings that people want to get creative with would be a great place to do that. It is in literature, in conversation, and in other types of things that can be distributed. But I agree with you that having a unified message sends a very strong message to people who can't they can't ignore that. It seems like there are people all over the globe who are part of a vast organization, as you said, a vast right-wing conspiracy. I wouldn't call us necessarily right-wing, but that's what they're going to think, is that we are very, very powerful, playing the pipes very loudly, banging the drums. It is going to get some attention for sure. Jimmy, really appreciate all you're doing, and I'm really glad you came on the show with me tonight.
Yeah, and I'm very happy to have been invited. Thank you very much, and good night to all the listeners.
All right, fantastic. I want to thank everybody out there listening. Really, you've done an amazing job with getting the word out about Renegade, about sharing these different links, doing whatever you can in the meantime. But think about getting active. Think about what you can do off the computer as well. I think things are going very well. Let's keep up the momentum, and I'll see you again, I think, this upcoming Tuesday. And there are some other people that have wild card ideas. But Tuesday, and then again on Friday. Stay tuned tomorrow for the roundtable. Good night.